Okay. Now, it's a little hard to see on the photo, but where you see me moving the cursor, that's where you want to look. The claim limitation at issue here is an end plate having a substantially flat surface. Somebody, I'm not saying whom, said, well, I can find an end plate, and my expert can put it in his report, where there's a horizontal slice of an accused pile tip. This is the pile tip here, alleged, the expert says, to comprise the claimed end plate. Well, you see, there's the horizontal slice, but it's a slice. This thing is on the inside of this big hulking piece of metal. The trial judge, after probably scraping themselves off the ceiling, said, wait a minute, the claim surface cannot be an imaginary one. Yet substructure's infringement theory would permit substructure to point to an imaginary slice of a solid cast pile tip as the claimed end plate having a substantially flat surface. Don't do something like this. Start off early in the case. Trial judge doesn't know you. You're at Markman. You're going to goof around and do something boneheaded like this. Just don't do it. Okay. Reference numerals and claims. This comes up if you, tends to come up if you are prosecuting a case in the United States that has a Paris Convention priority case that came out of the EU, more to the point, use the EPO practice. In the EPO practice, you have to essentially write in Jepson form, those of you who remember Jepson form, preamble, comma, the improvement comprising, and you have to use numbers in the claim after the improvement comprising. This is usual EPO format. So if you just copy those claims over into your U.S. case, now you've got reference numerals in the claim, and somebody, like somebody did in Grit Energy, slide 5, says, oh, that's a limitation. Federal Circuit said, no, we're not buying that, right? They note that this interpretation that's an error came from the claim inclusion of parenthetical reference numbers. And the court says that in other cases and also in Grit, that including references to a narrower non-limiting example serves not to limit the disclosure provided by the claim to that non-limiting example, but just maps the embodiment to the claim. I don't know how they came to that conclusion. Basically, who cares? The opinion is very clear on this point. Reference numerals in a claim do not per se limit their scope. Okay. Bennett regulator. Thank God we finally got a case that says this. I can't tell you how many times I've had people in various litigations say, oh, wait a minute, Phillips versus AWH. If you read all the way to the end, says, when in doubt, you find the claim valid. And for years, I have been telling people, I don't know what language your version of AWH was in, but it plainly wasn't English. That's not what it says. Finally, we got a Federal Circuit case that says that's not what it says. Okay? Claims are construed to preserve validity only if, after applying all the available tools, the claim is still ambiguous. And you can count on one hand the number of times that that situation has been found to exist. And here's the Leibel-Florsheim case, Phillips as well. We have certainly not endorsed a regime in which validity analysis is a regular component of claim construction. Okay, so please, this is now decided, dead, buried. Let's not play this back again. All right. Old law, but just to show you, here's one area where the circuit has not made any great changes. Right? The improper to read embodiments into the meaning of a claim term. We've got a May 2020 case here where The court says, while the embodiment cited by Verderi may inform the meaning of a disputed claim term, a particular embodiment appearing in the written description may not be read into a claim when the claim language is broader than the embodiment. And look at citing back to personalized media and in turn citing back to Resonate, which is a 2013 case, 2003 case, so it's 17 years old.